This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, I'm so fired up. We got Ben Smith. He is the president of Avesto. Everybody knows Avesto, but Avesto is a point of sales software for developers. But the other nice thing about them is they're collecting data on what's happening in housing, new construction. So many insights.
You like on this Vancouver episode. Real estate trends? We have Vancouver real estate trends.
Ben came down. He was in town from Whistler, where he resides.
That's right.
Came down, hung out for the morning. We recorded the show. Unbelievable episode today. Really?
I really was excited about this one. I think Ben is a super insightful guy. He's worked for Polygon. He's worked for Rennie prior to Avesto. He has a very nuanced understanding of our market, but also a number of markets across Canada. And there was new stuff. I love new when there's new
infos,
stuff.
New info, new takeaways, and like things where it was afterwards, I was like, I've never thought about that way.
Exactly.
And this is a fantastic episode. You're going to learn a ton today. Before we get to our conversation with Ben, we've got our MLA Weekly Newswire headline.
Yes, that's our pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. The headline this week, Adam, Budget 2024 brings a bevy of new housing policies.
What's a bevy? Bevy.
No one knows.
Yes.
I think it's a number of things is how I would describe it.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. The new budget definitely addresses affordability. And the big thing is it addresses it in three ways, really.
Yeah. And let's highlight those. So number one, new incentives for rental construction.
Yeah.
I think we've talked on the show, Adam, about GST not being applicable to purpose-built rentals, which I think everyone in the industry and everyone who wanted to see new housing being built applauded that. Now the federal government has introduced a number of new tax incentives for rental development. The MLA Canada team is projecting these tax incentives are going to allow many rental buildings to be built over the coming years.
Right. Also, feds are looking to free up land for new development, and they're reviewing the federal lands portfolio, taxing current vacant lands to encourage development, and offering up assets such as underutilized Canada Post facilities for higher density development.
And last, Adam, number three, investing in data collection and insights. This is an interesting one.
For our show
and for going back to like the old days of Jens von Bergman coming on the show.
That's who they should really incentivize.
He might be involved, honestly. He might be involved. But they're putting an additional $20 million over the next 4 years towards StatsCan and CMHC to basically just improve the scope and reliability of the housing data. If you don't have the data, how do you make informed decisions? And I think that's money well spent.
Absolutely, Matt.
If you like this content, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit mlacanada.com to subscribe today.
Yeah, and really excited about these headlines. I'm learning a lot about everything going on.
You know what? I love those guys. They put together something interesting, send it over. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and we're also sponsored this week by Scalina Real Estate, which is our company. We got a brand new listing, Matt.
That's right. We have a brand new listing. So here's the thing. Do you like Cambie Village?
Can't say I don't.
Everybody likes Cambie Village.
Yes, we're in Cambie. We're Mount Pleasant
West. We're a couple blocks from this new listing. 107-503 West 16th, right at 16th in Cambie. This is a 3-bed, 2-bath, nearly 15, just shy of 1,500 square feet over one floor. It's like a rancher, right? It's very hard to find in Vancouver. 1,500 square feet. Ground level, secure, with a really nice yard, fantastic outdoor space. It's at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. Head over there where we have all our featured listings. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us.
Yes. Sell with us gets you the sold plan. That's our step-by-step guide to get your home sold for top dollar in the shortest amount of time. It's over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Matt, without further ado, our conversation with Ben Smith. This is a great episode. Stay tuned.
Absolutely. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Ben Smith. He is the president at Avesdo. Every agent and industry person knows what Avesdo is, but I'm guessing that some people at home might not. But first, maybe, Ben, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Ben Smith. Been in real estate in Vancouver area for 20 years, I guess. Started on the development, or actually started in the marketing side. Worked for an ad agency and was at first more into the recreational side, intra-west clients, and then moved over to a residential side when I went and worked with Polygon Homes. And I always say Polygon's kind of where I got my MBA in real estate. They do an awful lot of volume and work in every municipality in Lower Mainland, every product type, and kind of learned the business there.
And did you actually have a real estate license, or was it more like you came at it from a marketing perspective and just got hooked?
100%. Yeah, exactly that. Never had a license. Actually came from originally from Ontario and grew up in Hamilton. And when you come out of kind of business school in Ontario, you end up in packaged goods. So my very first jobs at a school, I was working with Walmart and Canadian Tire. It was big retail. And unbeknownst to me, that's kind of what we do in New Home. We build retail brands and we build retail stores and we sell homes kind of like retail. So it was really transferable. And so that's kind of how when I got out here, I transitioned into that industry. And good thing, because there wasn't a lot going on in 2001 in Vancouver other than real estate. So, and maybe forestry, but I don't think I fit in there. I can't grow a beard, so.
Right. I have that same problem. Can you tell us a little bit about Avesdo?
Sure, yeah. So maybe fast forward, left Polygon, went to Rennie, left Rennie and started my own company called Kinsman, in which we were a consulting company. And in that process, I worked with Avesdo a lot. And what Avesdo is the best way to think of us is we call ourselves a sales operating system. Every other industry would call us a POS or point of sale software. For those that are familiar with CRM, CRM is customer relationship management. So that's focused around the customer. POS is focused around the sale. So our software manages that sales process. So from contracting to we have payment rails that can take deposits, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I was using the software in my company, had a lot of clients on it, and got really involved in just what we could do and started working with them a lot to the point that they ended up acquiring my company and I took over and have been president for 3 years there. So, yeah.
Nice. And you're living actually in Whistler right now.
I am, yeah. Yeah, so I guess I've long-time Whistler weekender. And, you know, it's kind of hard to be in Whistler when you're selling real estate. And so I used to commute. And my kids kind of grew up there. So they at one point said, we're not coming home. We're just going to stay. And so then I was really commuting. So COVID was, I'm one of those stories where COVID was good for me, where I got to work from home and didn't have to commute so much. So I'm in the city a bit. I mean, obviously, I'm here today, but it's also nice to be on the software side where we can kind of work from anywhere. And Avesto is national, so we've got accounts right across the country and even internationally in the US. So
you're an example of the hybrid model that kind of was changed kind of the face of real estate during COVID.
Yeah.
Do you think we move back to the old model? Let's say, first of all, do you think, and second of all, in terms of the data and how some of your clients are approaching it, but
100%. I would say for all my friends in commercial real estate, you know, put your earmuffs on, you don't like to hear this, but the truth is downtowns, just look at the numbers. Downtowns are tough. And like I said, we've got projects across the country, and like Toronto's downtown is tough. Calgary downtown is tough. Vancouver downtown is tough. And so what's going, those kind of outside the circle. So even if you're within Vancouver, you know, as soon as you cross the water, you're now starting to pick up a bit, right? Like Mount Pleasant's been really strong since COVID.
Yeah. Kits has been crazy too.
Exactly. You know, even Calgary, which, you know, we don't know necessarily as a condo market, but Bridgeland or Marda Loop, like they're outside of the downtown core. They're still urban. They do way better than the downtown. Similarly, in Toronto, you know, those kind of outsides are what's going. So a big part of that is the office market just hasn't returned. There's not as much energy downtown as there used to be. There's not as much need for those people, you know, especially when they were all thriving. You're at $2,000 a foot or really high rents. Like, you got to justify wanting to be down there, or you have to be really wealthy. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely changed how we see those things and you know, slowly coming back. But even the most diehards, I think if you're listening and you're like, no, we've been back in the office the whole time, I think you'd have to admit you're not. Most of the ones I know are, you know, offering Friday flex days or like you have to be in at least 2 days a week. So I think we've really seen everybody's been forced to shift. And in such a tight labor market, and we've experienced this at our own company, you know, you've got people that say, well, if you're not going to let me, then I'm not going to work here.
Right.
You know, they have a choice.
That's an interesting point, because the rigidity of the office, like the hours and like how many hours you're spending in the office has changed, I think, for a lot of people, whether they're going in physically or not, right?
100%.
I feel like that's our office too, is it's more of a transient environment as opposed to like people coming in at 8 a.m.
Yeah,
and
not everybody.
At 5,
and
right?
Like you and I might be in, but then there's certain people who are in Tuesdays or Thursdays, and it's like this. I'm coming at 11, leave at 1.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not super busy.
Don't name names.
but just Ben, for lunch.
Ben, this is actually another thing, because, okay, so you think about downtown Vancouver is the caller region seems to be really active and has been since COVID. Do you see downtown coming back, or is it the lack of the hybrid model, the new model? No, a lot of offices that are probably sitting vacant right now, or less vacant or more vacant. Do you see downtown coming back, like a resurgence of downtown?
Yeah, 100%. I see. You can't pour this many people into a country, create this much demand, and not have the downtowns come back. Like it's going to come.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to look different. They're reinventing, right? I mean, I think we're now seeing really standout buildings downtown, right? Like if they're going to be 2,000 plus a foot, they have to be. So the architecture is outstanding. They're attracting a different crowd than we used to try to get downtown when Yaletown started, and we were $400 a foot, right?
Yeah. Like Yaletown Park kind of.
100%, right? Like, you know, no disrespect to those buildings. They're great, but there's a lot of square boxes there versus what we're seeing downtown now, which is required.
And the finish is pretty like, well, all right.
100%. No, there's a lot of white fridges in Yaletown. Yeah. Although white fridges are coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
But like the interesting thing, one thing that I've been thinking about a little bit is, you know, how compared to most downtowns across Canada and the US, I would say Vancouver's a lot more residential, which seems to have helped over the last couple of years. Like, it's not like the office is hollowed out and then, you know, the downtown's just dead because there's just so much residential. But it still seems like we're still in kind of that, there's a loop where, you know, the fewer people there are, the less attractive it becomes to be there. And it's like, how do we, you know, it's like restarting an engine almost that is we're having trouble doing. But you think we will get back, but it's going to look different.
Yeah. And I don't know how, but I just, you know, there's so much demand. Like so much demand. Once people feel confident and that demand starts flushing through the system, I don't know how it won't come back.
Sure.
You know, and not to get into, we've got some socioeconomic problems right now throughout North America in our cities where there's a lot of crime and it's not as safe as it used to be, right? And I think Vancouver, as much as we've always had the downtown east side, Vancouver, people came here because it's safe. And I think that had an impact too, when all of a sudden it's like, I used to walk downtown east side all the time and I wasn't afraid.
Right.
I would say that's not true today. It's a little bit more dangerous than it used to be. And it's spread out now.
Kind of unpredictable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the crime is unpredictable too.
Totally. It
often is without, you know, very random.
Yeah. So I think as those things are getting addressed and, you know, people are all making conscious efforts to do that, there's a lot of people invested in making sure downtown goes. So
yeah,
they're gonna.
It's gonna go.
It will.
At some point.
And which makes it a great buy right now.
Well, this is it. And let's, because I mean, honestly, like one of the themes of this show for our listeners who like opportunities is we're going to be talking a lot about areas that are exciting in the Lower Mainland, in Canada, in the province.
Real estate trends.
But also, we had a great conversation before we pushed record about downtown and one area that you think is a good opportunity right now.
Yeah, Cole Harbour. I mean, look at Cole Harbour. Just go down there. Remember the last time you brought a friend to visit who'd never been here before and what happens to them when they get into Cole Harbour and they're just like, mind blown. They're like the mountains there and oceans and there's, you know, cruise ships coming in and, you know.
Yeah. Right beside Stanley Park.
Yeah. Like airplanes taking off in the harbor. Like it's exceptional. Yeah. And you look at what that's trading for. Again, you guys know better than I do on the resale side. Like it's a deal. And just look at the cranes in the sky downtown. There aren't many right now. And that's because those people who have that land can't start for less than $2,000 a foot.
When you were saying, so, and that land was bought a number of years ago.
Yeah, so that number has increased.
Yeah, so, and every year, it's just the cost of holding, it means it doesn't, it's even harder to pencil.
That's right.
And there's a couple of things I really, the Cole Harbour thing, so the buildings in many cases are exceptional or a better build quality than a lot of stuff downtown. Amenities are amazing. A lot
of plans too. Like I feel like they're
really great floor plans, large spaces, the water views. And a couple things. One is the sales ratio in Cole Harbour, I think, has been dragging down the average for downtown for probably 5 years plus.
It's like sub 15% or something.
Typically.
I think.
It's like, meanwhile, and Yale Town always drives it, right? Yeah. And I think it's because a lot of people feel Yale Town might be more restaurants, more a little bit more livelier.
Yeah.
But Cole Harbour is very amenity rich. And so you think about this, the sales ratio, but then also that most of the projects that fail to start or actually be built, a lot of concern is typically in that area as well. So yeah, the inventory, potential inventory coming.
Totally. I kind of took back roads this morning when I was coming here and I was driving down Nelson, but closer to Denman, and cherry blossoms are out. And I'm like, the West End is incredible. Like it's just beautiful part of Vancouver. And, you know, we have short memories, I think, in Vancouver, right? We kind of forget things are amazing and then we come back to them and then they burst again and then they kind of do this thing, right? Flex up and down. But it is amazing to watch just the impact of zoning as well and how the city moves people around. You think of South Granville, hasn't done much of anything when they put that rental moratorium on and there wasn't a lot happening there. And then slowly it kind of died. And then now it's getting some life again as some of these rental buildings at Broadway and the Broadway corridor comes through. And, you know, you think of Mount Pleasant, especially. We were talking earlier before we started the show about like one of the projects we did there and feeling scared to sell it at $640 a foot and then what you'd pay now.
Yeah.
Well, it's trading above Cole Harbour.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, yeah, because in many cases, it actually is. Yeah.
You know, the other thing about Cole Harbour is we've done a couple of runs around the seawall where we actually drive down there. And what you can park on the street. It's almost like
it's a weird spot of
definitely not bustling, but almost in a great way. Like it's a reprieve from the busyness of downtown in downtown. Like you can, you'll drive next to the seawall and I'll be like, you can park. It's like the street's empty. You're like, I can park anywhere. It's relaxed.
We used to say that about Marina Side, like how it was like kind of like this cutout, like little quiet, but Marina Side's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like you go down on a, like a nice day and walk around, that seawall is insane. It's like busy. I tried to jog down there last week and it was like, no big deal.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a couple humble brags going on.
Yeah.
We do a lot of exercise.
I tried to run 15K down there the other day. No, just kidding. Anyways, well, no, that's a great one. Cole Harbour.
I also think, you know, if for anyone out there, look at the price per square foot in Cole Harbour based on, and then look in anywhere outside of downtown in Vancouver, like Mount Pleasant or Kitts, or in Yale Town or downtown. And I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, it's, we talked about this earlier. Maybe I'll bring it up now and you can shut me up if it's the wrong time, but it's a funny thing that happens in the new home world with price when the market shuts off. And what you see happen is it really compresses, and more so than in resale. So what I mean by that is when the market's really vibrant and on, you may be selling like $800 a foot in Poco and you're 2000 plus downtown. There's a wide gap and then it kind of chunks out really nicely. So, you know, if you're 800 way out there, then the next town is 900, the next town's 1,000. Like by the time you get to Burnaby, you're like 1,200, 1,300. Then you get into Vancouver, you're pushing 14. You know, Mount Pleasant, that means Cambie should be 16, west side to, you know.
Yeah, west. It's pretty predictable in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it chunks up. And now all of a sudden you've got like Poco's 1,100 and, you know, you're getting, it's getting hard to find absorptions above 16. In Vancouver. Yep. But it's really compressed. And so why is that? Well, because the top's been chopped off and the bottom is still dealing with costs. Like they just can't launch unless it's that number. And then when you have affordability problems, what do people do? They run to the burbs. So all your demand now is sitting out in the burbs. So a fun stat I like to give, and I always do it with a caveat. So the worst stat, which is this one, I'm going to make it the best stat, but the worst stat that people usually offer in the news is the average price of a home across Canada. And why I say that's the worst stat is because it's not relevant at all. As we all know, real estate is so neighborhood specific.
Right.
The only reason it's relevant is because it helps us understand inflation. And so for us, you know, 2 years ago, the average condo through our system that sold nationally was under $900,000. This, in 2023, that number jumped $100,000. $980,000 was the average price of a home through a system. So that doesn't mean that that home in Burnaby dropped by $100,000 or went up by $100,000. It means that on average, people had to spend $100,000 more. So why is that relevant? Well, it's relevant to what I was saying before, where when you're starting to kind of run wherever you need to go to find affordability because the price is going up and you're pushing all that demand into the valley, you raise that floor. And then at the same time, you pull the price out of the cities, right? You don't have as much demand there. And so the top comes down and you just squeeze it. And what we see happen every time, as every TikToker says, we're going to crash. No, we're not. And in fact, it's going to be worse after. Because that bottom ain't coming down.
Right.
Like that's the new number. It's $1,000, $1,100 a foot. And it's, the top now gets to open up.
I was going
to
say, and when it snaps back.
Every time it happens, right? And every time people are waiting for that crash. And the thing you got to look at is look at the bottom. If people are paying more money out way out than they ever were before, they're not going to pay less when the market comes back. So. Yeah.
Watch the bottom.
But just to make sure I understand, the bottom is in a lot of ways that price, like that's a cost. Like you can't build new homes for less.
Yeah.
So they have to pencil in Poco or wherever, or else there's no homes being built there. So people are flooding out that way. It's an affordability story, but the interesting part, I think, is that it's kind of flattened out. And that's been 4 or 5 years now. We've totally flattened out.
100%. And then, I mean, any government person, if you're listening, please listen. Like, help us lower the cost of a home. All these grants and all these like things you're going to do to save housing, I'm always shocked that none of them affect the things that they can control. So what can they can control? Building code. Building code is obscene. I'm sorry. Like, it's so crazy what we have to do nowadays, or not me, what construction companies have to do to build these things. That cost is humongous, and it is rising. Environment stuff, which affects the building code. The stuff we're doing to try to save the environment for building that's probably not going to last more than 100 years is also gone crazy. So that's adding cost. Now add in safety. This is a number we rarely talk about. If you look at and talk to the trades about what they're paying on safety items, whether it's like having to get stamped drawings to change the tire on a forklift, or whether it's their WCB premium or whatever it is, right? There's huge costs. And then the one that we always talk about in development is development cost charges and what the cities are charging. And just go into mainstream news and you'll see those prices are going up. Well, why? Because the munis don't have any money anymore. So they need to, you know, extract more.
Yeah.
So take that cost. And then it's easy to see why we're $1,000 a foot in the burbs. And we're not going less because those costs aren't changing. You want to change the cost or the price, change those costs.
Yeah.
And then I didn't even talk about debt. I mean, debt's the biggest line item in your pro forma. And when you got rates what we're at now, like those costs aren't coming down.
It's funny because we see policy aimed at like kind of the high end of the market, or we have over the last decade. And then we see also incentives kind of given to first-time home buyers or people trying to get into the market. But really not enough actually focused on the bottom, getting that bottom price down.
Yeah, just, you know, look at the costs. Like,
if get the cost down, you'll get that bottom down.
Yeah, could you get, like, what if we went in and overhauled our safety standards and said, what's real, what's bureaucracy? And started to try to strip out the bureaucracy. Like, I'm not trying to say we should be Wild West again and, like, people hanging off the sides of buildings, putting nails in them. No, but there's excessive stuff in there. Are we trying to strip that out? Same with the environment stuff. Same with the building codes. Like, how much excess is in there? A lot of that stuff, too, you end up, we're into specialists, right? So you can't just, like, hire someone to build this piece anymore. Now you need a specialist who understands, like, air quality and all these different things, or this, how to do this special system that nobody knows how to do. And it's like, that's not a $30 an hour person. That's a $150 an hour person. Like, so all these things that we don't think about that are just adding cost, I think if we were looked at some of those things, it might pull down that price.
Yeah, there's a few buildings I can think of in Vancouver where you think, who can repair this complicated technology?
100%.
It's like almost enough not to maybe own in it because it's astronomical.
Totally. When I started in 06 with Polygon, people are going to laugh and get criticized for it, but there was an awful lot of baseboards around.
Yeah.
Baseboard heating, right?
Yeah.
It was cheap.
Simple and
effective.
Yes. Super cheap. And as the prices rose, like everything had to be granite and, you know, everything's behind a panel and we have very complicated heat exchange systems now. And like, it's expensive to do all those things.
Boy, build the Toyota Camry.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was interesting to talk about the leveling out of the pre-sale market and the pricing kind of across the geographical area of the Lower Mainland. You know, Matt and I a lot over the years have talked about this idea of like, why buy new construction in a given area when it seems like you can pay 30% less, or, you know, 20 to 40% less, call it, to buy something that was built in the last 10 years. Do you ever see that gap kind of narrowing again, or how does that play out?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. We talk about it a lot, right? So pre-sale, there's a couple of factors you have to think about. One is generally it's pre-sale. So you might be 3 years to 7 years or more till that thing has to get realized. So a lot of people made a lot of money in this game buying at that pre-sale price and closing. And in that scenario, it's the flip. The resale by the time you close is way higher than the pre-sale price you paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's difficult in these kind of markets where things are a little slower and that developer can't launch that project for less than a certain number because, as we talked about, the costs are there and they won't make any money. So it doesn't matter what the resale value is. That's what they have to sell it for. You still, as a buyer, have that thought pattern of going, okay, but in 3 to 7 years, what's it going to be, right? And I think we're going to start seeing things pick up here because people are going to start hedging, going, okay, well, interest rates are coming down. We're clearly at the end of this cycle. I can see now that that 1,100 foot a foot is going to become 1,400 by the time I close.
Right.
Right. And so that's where they really have to catch up and see where's resale versus presale. And so that's always going on and that flex mm-hmm. is always happening. And I think that's why you see investors coming in and out of the market. And the sophisticated investors never leave. This mm-hmm. is actually when they buy. They understand it. But in the hot markets, everybody and their brother jumps in and everybody's an investor, right? They're playing that game and understanding that that's how it works. Does that help answer?
Yeah, no, yeah. That makes sense. And I think the benefit too is, you know, that gap narrows over time, but then you also get the benefit of the 2-5
well,
10,
has
you
to,
get a brand new product.
100%.
At the end of the day, really new construction has to pull up the pricing. Right? Like of the whole market, because it doesn't make sense to have, because if they aren't able to achieve those prices, then there's fewer and fewer launches until there's fewer and fewer houses being built and there's more demand and less supply, and then we'll push up pricing, right? So it's like those prices right now that are above and beyond the resale market is still, it's an indication of where the market is heading over the next couple of years.
Totally it is. And
like it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, we see this over and over. With immigration continuing to grow and population growing, we've got this demand that's building up. And let's say we had, a realtor explained it to me this the other day this way. I really liked it. He said, you know, there's 10 buyers at any given time. In these down markets, 7 of them wait. So only 3 of them buy. But they're still buyers. They're just waiting. And then over time, that 7 becomes 14 and then 21, and it builds up and builds up. And we're adding more people into the country, so it's going to grow. It's not like we're shedding people, so that number grows. Mm-hmm. And it'll grow until the point where now it's at 700 buyers, and now all of a sudden that new home makes sense because there's so much demand for such little product. And maybe that's one thing I can talk about too. Given my purview at Avesdo, we see this and it always blows my mind, the ability for developers to control supply. Like it's unbelievable for people that aren't all part of the same company, for them to control supply the way they do.
Yeah.
Like the minute the market cools, they stop.
This is what the guys from MLA say.
Like it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, so I'll give you some—
Uncoordinated as well,
it's
right?
It's an uncoordinated effort and it's— Amazing. So I give you a couple stats. Based on what's sold this year, of what was put on, the sales numbers for new home are 75% of the new launch numbers. 75%. That's only 25% surplus. Now, a lot of those sales are coming from stuff that was brought on last year, but you can see that the developers are able to— They never bring on too much. They only bring on what the market will bear. And they always know within, call it a building, so say 150, 250 units, where things are at. Because if something doesn't sell very well, they know, and then they pull back. And we see it in our system. When we started this year, we had over 50 projects ready to go. Developers, like, we're ready to rock and roll. And then we saw them just start delaying, delay, delay. There's 15,000 units in our system right now that could launch tomorrow. So their ability to control it it's impeccable and crazy. A couple of reasons why that happens, I think, is in Canada, we don't have many public companies for real estate. Like none, really. I mean, there are a couple, but really there's none. Whereas in the US, there's lots. So if you think about public companies, they're kind of forced to kind of try to make their year, right? So they end up pushing out more than they have to. Whereas in Canada, most of the developers are family companies. So they're looking at the return on the project, not on the calendar year.
Incentives totally change.
So their ability to control that supply from year to year, it's impeccable. And so that's why we don't end up with these boom busts or haven't in the last 20 years.
But we do end, going back to your point about the 7 to 14 to 21, we do end up with demand shocks as we've seen over the last 10 years over and over again.
And the supply isn't there to meet the demand shock.
100%. And that's why another thing for the governments, I'm like, you want to solve the housing problem? Go talk to those people that have 15,000 units And if they're in our system, like we're the end of the line, right? You're ready to launch when you're talking to us. And so that means you've got a permit or you're almost ready to have your permit. You're ready to rock and roll. So, you know, if I was government, and again, I'm maybe playing armchair politician, which I shouldn't, but ask those people, why aren't you going? How do we get you to come to market? I could spend $100 million to bring 100 rental units to the market. Or I could ask the guys that have 15,000 units.
That, ready to go.
Ready to go in the next 2 months. Right. What do you need to bring that to market? We villainize investors and new home condos all the time. And I always like to point out, who owns that rental building? Probably a pension fund.
Right.
It's an investor. It's just an institution. So why are we penalizing condo owners because it's,
the mom and pops.
Your buddy Joe. Like, in fact, shouldn't that be what we're trying to do is help the middle class grow their wealth? And we don't have crazy pensions. So this is how people are trying to build their retirement plans and things like this, right? And it brings much need. Of those 15,000 units, how many do you think are going to be rentals? So, you know, we're doing some great things around trying to help it so that people can't get kicked out because somebody wants to take their condo back and stuff like that. Like, those are good. We need that stuff. But let's not villainize the condo and the condo owner because there's a ton of supply, a ton that could come if we helped it.
With immediacy.
Immediacy.
Yeah.
Like, and I see it every day. Like, there's that 50 number is now grown. There's tons of projects.
That's wild because we've talked for a long time about with many different people in the development community about, okay, what is like pulling these certain levers at the municipal, provincial, and federal level? Like, how long does it actually take to create any kind, to move the needle at all? And nobody thinks it's less than a decade or more, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, we have this at the government's disposal, but there's been no effort to make it happen.
No, do the opposite, right? We need to create a new program that's going to take 3 years to build if it can even happen. So what happens? Like, let's run this through. Why is everything stalled? Well, things stall because that price went up and their interest went up and they now need more money, but there's less demand. So what they perform it at $1,000, they maybe need now to sell for $1,100, but the market won't pay $1,100. Okay, that's not going to go. Stopped. You know, the other reason is then they go, okay, well, this new government program's coming out. Let's perform it now as a rental. Let's see if we can rejig it as a rental. And then we'll turn into that, see if we can qualify for this program and make it work that way. So few of those rarely work, right? Even if they did, you're now going back to the drawing board because a rental building doesn't look the same as a market building. Mm-hmm. So that's going to take time. So to your point, you're right. Like, it just creates so much lag and so much time. Whereas we're spending, you know, hundreds and millions of dollars and billions, is there another way to look at it? Could we say, these are all right there. They're ready to rock and roll. How do we help them? How do we move them forward? Because you could bring an enormous, like thousands, not hundreds, thousands immediately. Like another good stat is across the country, what we've seen through our system is down 50%. So from the peak to where we're at now, 50% of the transactions are going through. That's how quickly they stop. And then the supply stops with it, right? They stop bringing stuff on, stop selling. And in Ontario, it's even worse. Like, there's parts of Ontario, they're down 70%. And so BC's really been carrying it. We've been able to keep that
going. Well, I was going
to
say, and you said, and this was offline, but in Toronto, what was in the first 2 months of the year?
Yeah, January, February of this year, there wasn't a single tower launch in the GTA. Not one.
Which Wild. Is crazy.
And I believe the only one in Vancouver was Streetside's Juno.
Right.
Right.
Which, again, Vancouver, much smaller than Toronto, and it's producing. I actually, we'll see if I'm right. It's going to be pretty close. I think this may be the first year where we do about as many as Toronto does.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's going to be close. Just based on it really shut off there.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
And can you explain, you explained this to me before we went live, but it's interesting to think that Toronto is a much bigger market. It's a diverse, world-class city. And yet the real estate market there in some ways feels much more boom and bust than Vancouver's. And you kind of had some interesting points around pre-construction for that kind of boom and bust market. Can you explain that?
Yeah,
in,
for sure.
In relation to Vancouver?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that look at. One is Toronto's ahead of us in a lot of ways, but Vancouver, in terms of density and those things, we're way ahead. So if you think about, like, let's just play a game right now. For those who are listening, try to think of the first single family builder that comes to your mind right now. For many of us, would be like, I can't even think of one. And if we do think of one, maybe they're like a custom build or something. They're probably not doing a ton of volume. If you said that in Ontario, you're immediately going to think of three builders that are massive.
That are doing like master plan communities.
They're doing huge, they own farms. Like as far as you can see, they're doing tons of stuff. We've sort of moved them out. They've moved to Chilliwack. They're even pushed out. They don't really exist here, I want to say. And sorry if you're a single family home builder. I don't mean disrespect.
No, but even Qualico, which is the Western Canada, they're street side here and it's a totally different game.
That's right. They're urban.
Or yeah. People that do that, they probably do more multifamily than they do single family.
Exactly. So that's my point. So you've seen all the big developers here in the multi space start move, and they've been buying land for a long time all the way out to Mission. And they're bringing multi out to Mission because we've had affordability challenges before Ontario did. And so they started getting into townhomes. Then they're like, oh, that doesn't work. We need to go to wood frame. And then now they're even doing towers. So now go to Ontario. You've got these single family builders that have been able to build for so long. They're the ones that own most land in those suburban markets. And they now have to figure out how to do multi. So they're like, okay, let's start like usual. They'll go probably with a freehold townhouse. And then, oh, that's still $1.5 million now. We're going to have to get to an apartment. And they have to learn. And you're seeing more and more of those companies create new divisions with the word urban tacked on, right? Like Madame Urban. And they're figuring out how to do density. And then you've got the guys that know how to do it downtown. They don't have the land, or certainly like we do out here in BC, in the burbs. So they're having to get land. So that takes time. It takes time for the single family guys to figure out the multi and the other way around. It's happening. Don't get me wrong. It's just not happening to the same degree that it's like not even a thought here. Just in Vancouver, yeah. It's the way
it
works.
They've been land banking out.
It's been happening for years.
Forever.
Like, I mean, mid-2000s in Polygon, we had stuff in Abbotsford. Like it was already happening. And so I think that's a big part.
So there's like a bottleneck there essentially where the guys who are doing towers only have land in the GTA and that's not moving. And the guys in the burbs are single family guys.
Yeah. And they're learning to the other. And then you think about what happened in Vancouver. Why did we drop for sure in the last couple of years, but not to the same degree? Because what happened? The guy that had the tower downtown, you know, let's pick on our friends Anthem. Like they're a very large company, so they got land bank all over. Okay, well, we'll sit on that for a bit. Let's go launch in Burnaby. Let's go launch in Coquitlam.
Right, of course.
They already have land. They already have something going through and permitting. They just switch.
Yeah.
Whereas that's starting to happen back east, but it's a different thing. The other thing, factor that comes in is you just think of a point tower in Vancouver is, call it 150 on the small side, 250. Some of the big ones in Metrotown, like tall ones, are getting bigger, but that's doable to get through. So let's say you would have done it in 30 to 90 days to get your presale. Now it might take you 9 months to 12 months. Well, transplant to Toronto and you've got like an entire city block that's got a podium with four towers on it and thousands of units. Every one of those towers is 500 units to 800. What they have to get through to hit their pre-sales, it's a lot bigger. So when the investor starts to pull out, it has a huge impact on them. So you do see for them this like more start-stop, whereas in Vancouver, we can keep going. We just sort of change the product. And we've seen that in what's selling. So a lot of the stuff is just moving more to the burbs. And different from, say, 2008, that crash, downtown came back pretty quick and Langley took longer. It's the opposite now. Downtown's taking a long time to come back, but those burbs are really thriving right now.
You know what you need for your Ontario? You guys should come out with like an app that's like a Tinder for landowners and multifamily. Like swipe left, swipe right. Like I own a lot of land, but I don't know how to build multifamily. Honestly, that they should be collabing.
Yeah.
And that might help. But
I kind of wanted to just talk a little bit about, you know, you just touched on it a little bit, but what are some of the biggest trends you're seeing right now in Vancouver, like, or in Metro Vancouver in the pre-construction space? How has it changed? And where is it going to be maybe projecting out what you're seeing? Because everything takes 3 to 7 years. Like, where are we in 2027?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest trend is the burbs.
Yeah.
You know, you see where the launches are happening and where growth is really happening is around transit nodes in the burbs, whether it's Metrotown, Brentwood. And it's even funny to call those burbs because, you know, they're so urban now. But outside of Vancouver proper, right? Coquitlam, all the stuff going up Lougheed there. It's amazing.
I don't even think of those areas almost as suburbs now. It's funny you say that, but I, you know, it's like now I think it's almost like moved to like Abbotsford, Chilliwack.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but it's also like, interesting to think, you know, like when you mentioned, you know, what downtown looks like after it comes back will be different. It's like all those areas have totally transformed. Like it's, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, as I say it, it doesn't sound as interesting as I thought it did, but it's interesting to think of like, by the time downtown comes back, the whole region is
city centers.
Yeah, is totally reshaped.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to talk to the mall guys and see like what's happening in retail. I know we've got some economic problems right now, but you've got more people in the day going and getting something they needed at the mall, or like they've, because we're working from home, there's a lot more like, oh, I'll just run out, or I'll, you know, I'll sit in that coffee shop and do my work for the next 3 hours. And then, so I wonder if that life, you know, for a long time in new home, we always talk about like that energy that you need and the heat, like the heat of bodies. And so where are those now? And I mean, you go out, transit is a lot of energy around transit. It's funny because I remember many, many years ago, we talked about we needed to go from two cars to one car. That was like the first thing that the Lower Mainland had to figure out. And then now we're really moving from one car to no cars.
Yeah.
And transit, as we've gotten better and have better transit, more people are using it. And like we see it in the numbers that they can't keep up with the amount of use that's happening. And
right.
People are moving around those areas. I was in Marine Gateway the other day and it was popping. Like there was a lot of stuff going on. There's people in cars coming in, people coming off the train. Like,
but it's interesting to think about how that the lived experience of that going from two cars to no cars, because you were, when we were talking, you were driving and you're probably in a traffic jam, but you were like, what's happened to the city?
The traffic and I'm not the only one saying it.
It's so like,
this is,
worse.
We used to talk about like the weather and the Canucks, but now everyone just talks about traffic. The traffic is so bad.
I was in a traffic jam, now. I said, for over 10 minutes on a residential street in East Van. Like it was like, what's going on?
It used to be construction, but now I think it's just, I don't know what's going on. Is it less? I don't know.
It's painful to drive. My wife said she thought it was, you know, like say we're driving down the Nanaimo and it's like, oh, bike lanes have kind of impacted. There's a one less lane. But I think it's that combined with maybe an influx of how many hundreds of thousands of people have shown up in the last year or two. Yeah. But it's really created a situation where if I can get a car. Like, it's like, if I can lose a car, I'd be happy to.
I have a theory on it. I don't know if this is true at all, but it seems to me it makes sense that houses are turning into apartments, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I remember when I first moved to town, like maybe your neighbors would have a suite, maybe not. A lot of people didn't, or they didn't, they had it, but they didn't use it.
Right.
You know, now with the cost and every, like every house has at least one suite, if not more, unless you're in some of the more luxury areas. So just think about that. Like now you've got twice as many cars on a residential street because it was designed for single family homes, not
right.
the other, right?
Right?
So I think that happens. Whereas in the more dense areas around transit, those people actually have less cars. So you feel it in like the side street where you didn't used to.
Right. This is the traffic jam
right.
In Norquay Village where it was like, this is taking me 20 minutes to get off this, like literally a residential street. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah. And I mean, I spend some time in Ontario and their traffic is still way worse than ours.
Like, yeah. I feel like world's smallest violin for the guy in the small
yeah. And there starts yeah. at like 5 a.m. now. Even worse, imagine being on a paid highway, like one of their toll, the 407, and you're in a traffic jam and you're paying for it.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, like we, like this city's so walkable and easy to, like none of us.
Yeah. Well, that's driving. Why yeah. I think it's even more attractive with them.
Except for Ben from the Sea to Sky.
That's right.
But okay.
Although even that, you know what? I take the bus a lot.
Really?
Yeah, because it can work. I can use my phone. And
is that getting busier, the Sea to Sky commute? Because I'm guessing like Squamish and all the areas that are filling in and people that are commuting, presumably it's a lot busier coming into the city.
The worst day is a sunny day.
Oh, yeah.
Like sunny days, the Sea to Sky is packed because everybody's out hiking and doing something, and trying to get in or out of the city is a nightmare. And then, you know, you just pick your times, right? Like Sunday after the ski rush or after people leaving. There's a lot of people coming from Squamish now, so.
I'm conscious that we've kept you for now almost 50 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I really want to get to, and it's been a really good 50 minutes, but I want to get to some opportunities, I think. First, let's talk about
Cole Harbour.
We've talked about Cole Harbour, which I think is like a gem.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the Lower Mainland. And I think we should do Lower Mainland province and then across the country.
Are you buying Nova Scotia?
Yeah, some places we might avoid. So maybe starting in the Lower Mainland, like area or areas you are really excited about where you kind of see an opportunity.
But yeah, I mean, I think Vancouver. We're the, I think, eighth largest city in Canada and trade on a world stage. Like no matter where you go, people know Vancouver. And right now, when you're at, if it's capping out at 1600, that's a buy when the bottom's at 1000. And so I think it's going to go, it's just a matter of when. I think whether you want to buy for investment or you want to live here is still an amazing city. Like the sun's shining, you got water, mountains. Like, come on, this place is incredible.
When the sun's shining, this is like, it just, it isn't, we were just talking about this the other day. Like the last few days, today is a bit of a dud, but the last few days have been incredible. And the city's really come alive. Also, World Cup. Can't help but think that's going to have another injection into like Vancouver on the global stage.
Totally. We're growing up. And then the next one I'd say is transit nodes. Anywhere along transit is buy. You know, just go to another city and ride the transit and figure out that people live their entire lives around how the transit working. And we're getting there, right? And you start to feel it in some of those areas that are developing now. And you're in Metrotown, Brentwood, Marine Gateway, these places that are starting to build up a bit now, you can feel what it's like to live there and just be a transit rider and you can get everywhere you need to go. So I think those are really great opportunities. You know, I think Squamish is going to continue to grow. It's always going to be challenged by that road and it's one way in, one way out, but it's an amazing place to live. So we're seeing lots of people want to move there for sure.
Whistler.
Or Pemberton.
Oh, yeah, Pemberton.
Yeah, but not Whistler or Pemberton. Like, choose.
Yeah, I mean, those speak to just, I think, Canada, right? Like, people want to live in Canada, and the nice places, there's so much demand. Like, they can't keep up. You know, I think red flags, there are some zones that people got really excited about over COVID, and they all moved there, and then they realized, I don't have to go back to the office every day, but I still have to go back one day a week or 2 days a week. We were seeing those areas a little bit further afield where they got a little bit big for their britches. Those are tough.
Do you feel like, and we had a, this is, and I don't want to sidetrack the opportunities because we got to get back to there and we got to do Canada still. But as someone who lives in Whistler, who spent a ton of time in Whistler and also who did a lot with IntraWest in early days, so you've kind of watched the whole Whistler trajectory. Is it in a transitioning moment? Because I kind of think about that. What was that study that came out? I think it was it Sotheby's or Angle EV or someone did a, where they looked at the price per foot in all the global kind of ski resort towns that were kind of on the level of resort of Whistler. And the argument was that Whistler's still significantly undervalued on a global scale.
For sure.
Do you feel like we're like we, one of the conversations we had today is you were saying like, it's tough to make a go in Whistler, obviously. If you're like, you know, the person that was carrying, had two or three jobs that was just getting by, that's kind of been replaced now with people that, you know,
the global elite.
The global elite, sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the it's only going to keep going up. Like it is maybe sad for some of us, but true. Like look at Aspen or Vail or some of these bigger places, like they're expensive. And all you got to do is drive the Sea to Sky on a weekend and see the number of Washington plates. And every one of those is getting a 20% discount with currency. And there's a lot of people that want to come there. And it's super accessible. Like, why do I live there? Because when I was speeding and having to commute, I could do it in an hour and 15 minutes. Like, it's not that far from the city. Mm-hmm. You're close to a major airport. Like, pretty easy. There's very few days where you're going to get stuck. I don't know if you've ever been to Aspen, but you can get stuck there really easy because, you know, when the weather comes in, you can't get out of that airport and you might be stuck for a few days. You might get stuck overnight once a year going to Whistler, but it's pretty desirable.
Let's do Canada.
Wait. Let's do BC.
Oh, yeah, BC. Yeah. I guess Squamish. Yeah, that was more.
Yeah. So that, I think, you know, we're seeing Okanagan's continues to grow and be a good market to go to. Certainly the pre-sale stuff is picking up there over the last few years. So I'm going to say the same thing across the country. Transit, obviously, in Toronto is good. And out to the burbs, we're seeing like Burlington, really crazy. I'm from Hamilton and crazy prices in Hamilton that I never would have thought is happening. But again, back to cost, you can't build it for any less. So I think you're going to see those markets go. They're all along. They got great highway networks, so they're easy to get to. So we're definitely seeing those markets. If you needed to go downtown or something for work, you can still get there within an hour and a half or whatever the case, or take the train now. So again, I think those, the peripheral markets, Nova Scotia, you brought up others. I think Calgary is a great example of that, right? Calgary is still cheap on a price per square foot basis for a condo. And why? Because you can still get a single family home there. So I think there's a lot of Canada that's still really driven by single family. And until that kind of goes away or the cost gets so exorbitant where they just can't build it. And even that, you're seeing their first move is townhomes before they have to get to really high density. But I think those markets are still fairly single family and it's about land. And
it's about land and having that, like the white picket fence. 100%. And Calgary, for sure, in the West Coast, you know, next to Vancouver, I think is one of the nicest places to be if you have those single family aspirations.
Edmonton too, actually.
Yeah,
Edmonton's great. And you're seeing some density downtown for sure. Some rental buildings and there's some nicer condo buildings for the downsizer. It's actually funny, if you spend any time there, most people don't know this, but they're quite metropolitan. I think because it gets so cold in the winters, people travel and they're well-traveled there and they go to museums and these things that you don't associate with Calgary or Edmonton, but they do. And so there's actually some really neat things that you can find within those places. So great places too.
I just had two questions. One is we've been asking this to a lot of people lately. You have a niece, she's got, you know, a budget of say $1 million, neighborhood, and what she should be buying right now.
Ooh, good question.
$1 million always caps it, though.
Yeah,
well, it's hard to. If I say she's young, it sounds crazy that she's got $1 million. And if
she's been working for,
$2 million, she's now your niece.
I'm going to defer to something Michael O'Dane said to me, and he's way smarter than I am. So I'll share his wisdom way back when he said, "Buy the best thing you can in the best neighborhood you can." That's what you should
do. Period.
period. So
that's a, you know, it's funny. Like we've said that a million different ways on this show, but the one is like tier one product in a tier one neighborhood, and you'll always have strong demand for it.
Yeah. Wherever you want to live, pick the best neighborhood, try to get into it and get as much as you can.
The second question I had was, she comes to you and she says, downtown Toronto or downtown Vancouver right now, what should I be buying?
Well,
just straight opportunity.
I gotta go Vancouver. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry to all our clients in Toronto, but it's just incredible here. I mean, it's a complete bias, but mountains, ocean, walk across the entire city in half an hour. It's hard to compete with that in my view.
Hey, and you're from Hamilton, so I don't know.
That's
no
right.
Bias.
Yeah. I mean,
you know both, both provinces.
Yeah. I've lived here for now since 2001. So that shows you where my heart lies.
We do have this segment called the Five Wire, Ben, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Yep.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Okay, so question number one, what is one book that you'd recommend for all of our listeners?
Oh, I hate these because I'm the worst reader. I'm going to pass because I'm not even going to think of one fast enough.
Do you have a, well.
No, you know what? Here's another one. You're a podcast guy.
Yeah.
You listen to like something totally unrelated to real estate.
Okay, that's, there you go.
What are you listening to?
I love The Bomb Hole. So The Bomb Hole is a snowboard podcast and they always have
really, never heard of it.
Really interesting people on, a lot of snowboarders, but then also sometimes Ken Block, who you may know, who founded DC. His was a really interesting episode. He talked a lot about business and how he came up. So
that's one thing on social media, the amount of when I go to like the discovery, it's like all snowboarding and skateboarding. It's like I'm like a 16-year-old.
You've been typecast.
But it's funny though. And also one thing I talk about with, he's a fellow realtor, but a friend of mine who used to skateboard as well. The level of talent that these kids have, like that are like, you know, 15 years old or whatever. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
next are your level. Kids, I know they said they didn't want to come back to Vancouver from Whistler. Are they the kids you see up on Whistler?
Two of four. Yeah, two of four. And they're pretty incredible. I'll brag for 1 second. My one son's a professional snowboarder. He's in Switzerland right now. And right as I was driving in, he sent me a text of him doing a double backflip over the lodge at some place in Switzerland. I'm like, they're unbelievable how good they are now.
Wow.
It's incredible.
So this, you know,
is he is he on Instagram? I should follow him.
Yeah, you should.
In the last few years, what is one new belief, behavior, or habit that has most improved your life?
Oh, you know what? I've gotten on to non-alcoholic beer.
Nice.
And that's excellent. I'll tell you, Guinness is the best one, the zero.
I had a Corona not long ago.
The Corona one's
pretty good.
Not bad either, but it's great. You feel better and it's, you know, you also don't have to, I'm not drinking right now. You could still go out with your friends and bring a couple. So that's been a habit that's changed.
You should try the ones with alcohol. just question number three. What have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
Oh, I watched The Gentleman on Netflix.
Oh yeah.
Did you watch that?
I'm four in, I think.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, well, spoiler alert.
No spoilers, but there's a pretty good chicken scene.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the first one, yeah.
Not convincing.
Favorite band or music?
Oof.
A not convincing chicken scene.
That's a pretty good non-convincing.
Right now, I'm pretty mellow, so I like the singer-songwriters.
Be the chicken. Sorry.
Be the chicken. That's right.
Sorry, go on. Favorite band or music?
Singer-songwriters these days, but as a kid, I was quite into punk, so I would have said like Pennywise or something like that.
Yeah, that's,
which I've been trying to find again.
You know where all the indie rock people and punk rock people are now? They're all in like country, alt country and singer songwriter country. We were saying that's like the new indie rock, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Last but not least, something that you have purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life recently.
Lego.
Okay. Interesting.
So my kids are, I've got four kids, and the last one's 18 and he's graduating next month. So I'm becoming an empty nester. And for all those, I was told, and I'm going to tell you, get hobbies. And so as it's been coming up and I'm spending a lot of weekends by myself, I'm like, I need a hobby. And someone bought me an adult Lego kit, and it was awesome. And I had so much fun. So
that's like,
are you doing like towers?
I looked at those. I've been looking at the architecture.
No dragons.
Multifamily.
Yeah. But I build these, like the last one was this really elaborate Jeep that had a full working gearbox so I could actually understand how the gears work in 4x4. It was awesome. It was so much fun. So there you go.
That's like the... I feel like that would be, you'd probably get lost in that. There's like a zen. You turn off your phone
in those moments.
Yeah, I have a saying, VA, visual achievement, and that's great VA. And so much of what we do, right? You don't get VA very quickly. It takes seven years to build a tower.
Yeah.
Whereas you sit down and build some Lego, you get strong VA.
That would take Matt and I 7 years. So that's that's good. We'll leave it there. But Ben, how can people find out more about Avesdo and what you're up to? And
Yeah, thanks for having me. Avesdo, AVESDO.com. If you want to find me, just go on LinkedIn, Ben Smith, and then find me within Avesdo and direct message me.
I got to say, Avesdo has been a game changer for agents, like the disclosure statements, signing, and you know, it's so convenient for us.
It's good to hear.
Yeah, so that's great. Thanks for coming, and we'll love to have you back to catch up.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Ben Smith, president of Avesdo.
Really enjoyed having Ben on the program. Came in from Whistler, which is always, it's nice to have him down here. And spent the morning. It was nice.
You know, I'd never met Ben before he was in the studio. And I got to say, that conversation was excellent.
Yes.
I was very excited to release it. And I'm very excited to have Ben back.
Yeah, I'm always, it's always great when, I mean, my expectations were high for Ben.
Yeah. But, he's a known quantity. Don't get me wrong. But it's just, when you get to sit down and pick his brain, it was exciting.
The other thing is, I mean, in talking about forces, how many great episodes we have coming up. We've got recorded an episode with RBC cross-border representatives that are going to be talking about U.S. investments, how to get qualified for buying in the U.S.
And it's always what strikes me is it's never as hard as you think. Like, that's why the U.S. kind of terrifies, I think, a lot of people, is credit rating.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that you think. It's kind of an interesting conversation.
And it's interesting, too, because we've got one person who's in Florida and another person who's in Quebec, but they're basically working together to get Canadians to invest over the border. And here's the thing. Some really great emerging markets come out of that episode. So that's coming up in the future. The other thing is Daryl Simpson has not been on the program for just over a year.
Right. He's now the president of Townline.
President of Townline.
Unvarnished viewpoints on housing in Vancouver. I feel like that's what I love about Daryl. He doesn't...
Candid.
Candid, does not mince words, and he tells it like it is.
And, how many times can you say
this? Let me think.
Yeah.
He definitely doesn't. There's no gloss. There's no gloss on this.
it's a good episode. And then we have so many other episodes.
Kevin Skipworth is coming up
this week.
Yeah.
It's been probably a year and a half at least since we've had Kevin on the program. So some staple guests with insightful real estate analysts coming on the show. So
absolutely exciting. So stay tuned for that. You can also head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Adam, this is one way to stay connected. Click on the Livewire. This is our weekly newsletter with all the upcoming episodes, VIP presale access stats, different type of stats. If you want to dig deep into the sales ratio in a certain price band in a certain neighborhood, we got you covered. That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have things like private client services.
Yeah, man. And if you're not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. There's no reason why you shouldn't have a PCS account set up, because really that's the best way to monitor the market and see those sold prices, see days on market. And if you are somebody who actually owns a house or a condo in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland, I should say, it's really the best way to just kind of keep an eye on the sales in your area. So get in touch if you want your own free PCS account. It's the best out there.
Absolutely. If you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, and we're back next week with another great episode. Thanks for listening.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.